Last month, Alcoholics Anonymous turned 75. The first of the 12-step programs is hosting a national meeting this week to celebrate the anniversary. More than a million Americans in the 50,000 or so meeting groups around the country. AA's fellowship and support for them is a lifeline. But no matter how many academics study this topic, we still don't know why. Why this plan that was created by an alcoholic stockbroker after being given hallucinogens, why this plan works better than anything else that doctors and researchers can come up with in the 7 decades that have followed. We're joined now by Barbara from Kentucky. She just got her 14-year token on Friday. Congratulations, Barbara.
Thank you very much.
And Brendan Kerner, who wrote an essay on AA in Wired magazine this week.
So, thanks for having me.
You know, it's really interesting in your article, Brendan, the description that you give about how AA came into being. Can you relate that tale?
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. It was a man named Bill Wilson, known as Bill W. to enthusiasts and people who follow AA history. He was a very bad alcoholic and had been in the hospital several times. And on his 3rd trip to the hospital, he had an epiphany. God came and visited him in his hospital room after he got down on his knees. And he therefore dedicated his life to helping other alcoholics who at that time in the 30s, basically, if you had this disease and a few treatments didn't work, they sent you to an asylum.
Barbara, you know, Brendan's article talks a lot about why we can't figure out why AA works, but maybe you can tell us from your own experience how AA, why it worked for you.
Well, the main thing is you have to be ready. You know, if you're not ready and you're not tired of the way you are, nothing's going to work for you. You know, you have to be sick and tired of living the way you were living, of doing the things you were doing, and you just can't take anymore. And a lot of people never get to that point. And it's very tragic because we see it all the time.
Well, that would explain why AA doesn't work for some people. Right, Brendan?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. We don't know a whole heck of a lot about who AA tends to work for. One thing we do know is it works best for those people who have pretty much bottomed out. The most desperate alcoholics are those who tend to benefit from the program the most.
Okay, well, give us some perspective here. How successful, how effective is AA, and how does it compare with other strategies?
Well, that's the $64,000 question that researchers have been trying to solve for many decades and really have never quite rounded out the solution. One of the big problems with AA is that it's very difficult to study in a randomized trial. It's this program we use to treat a very prevalent disease, but unlike other treatments, we really can't test it in a clinical manner. One data point we do have is a trial from the 70s called Project Match, where the 12 steps were analyzed in a clinical setting, not in church basement settings. And the results from that basically showed that the 12 steps worked about as well as other therapies, not necessarily better. But what's impressive is that the 12 steps, of course, were created by a failed stockbroker, not by medical professionals. So it's kind of an incident of the triumph of amateurism.
I guess I wonder if that suggests that almost anything would have worked, assuming you have as the initial condition this reaching bottom. Barbara C., tell us, what happened to you physically and mentally when you reached that bottom point? Because you really talk very specifically about crossing that threshold.
I had got to the point to where I didn't like myself anymore. I didn't like the things I was doing. I didn't like the stuff that I was doing to my family. I had contracted a disease where they had given me less than a year to live. And basically, I didn't want my daughter to see me die drunk.
Brendan, do doctors have a name for that state? Is there a neurologic condition that describes what Barbara is saying there?
Not really, but I think that this is a good time to bring up some of what doctors do know about why it may work. And I think one of the big parts is the group dynamics, is the fact we're learning more and more about how when you build social networks, and that's what AA basically is, it's building new relationships and social networks with people for whom sobriety is paramount. The influence those people have in your networks is much greater than we ever really thought before. So that's a big part of it. And also the fact that the alcoholic brain is very damaged and really isn't able to resist the lure and temptation of alcohol. And a lot of what the steps do is kind of act as a substitute brain in many ways, a substitute prefrontal cortex, which is damaged by alcohol. And that allows people, that gives people the strength to resist the temptations they have on a regular basis while getting sober.
Well, I mean, that actually is a fascinating way to look at the 12 steps. Barbara, do you look at them that way? I mean, it did for you when you were there in I guess, this condition of desperation. Did the 12 steps then become your system for getting through each day?
No. You know, you can look at it in a clinical way, and people will try to analyze everything that works. The main part of our program is one alcoholic helping another. You know, you can't build a house by yourself if you've never built one. You know, so when you're trying to get sober, you can't get sober by yourself if you've never done it.
So you say it's the community.
Yes, it's the therapeutic value of one alcoholic helping another. That is the main thing.
Okay.
And getting a connection with God.
Well, whatever it does to the brain or to the community and the environment, it's worked for 75 years better than any other program. Barbara is an AA member who just got her 14-year token on Friday in Kentucky. And Brendan Kerner, a writer for Wired magazine, wrote about the 75th anniversary of AA for the magazine.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.